wild thing, I think I love you. But I wanna know for sure. Come on and hold me tight.
Radio Gorgeous, created by women for women. RadioGorgeous.com.
I'm welcoming journalist and author Clover Stroud, author of The Wild Other, a memoir, to Radio Gorgeous. Welcome, Clover.
Hi there.
Introduce us to The Wild Other.
So The Wild Other is my memoir about, well, it's basically from zero to now, and I'm 41. But it's really inspired by my mother and a very, very bad riding accident that my mum had when I was 16, but which and she was left with very bad brain damage, but which propelled me out into life on a series of slightly crazy, very exciting, sometimes scary adventures, and a lot of children. I had a lot of children during that process as well. So the book is about that trajectory, really. And Mum died a couple of years ago, and it was after she died that I felt like I wanted to write about what happened to her and my journey throughout that as well.
Propelled is a very good word. I felt it was a very propulsive moment in you and your siblings' lives, and it did push you.
Yeah, I mean, it was massive. She was a really, really loving, really wonderful mother. I'm the youngest of five, and she had made us all feel very secure and as though we could do anything. She made us feel very good about ourselves. She was my model for mothering, really. But then suddenly, in the space of one day, this wonderful life that we had living in the country was suddenly over, although we didn't know it at the time that it happened. She fell off her horse, and she was then in a coma for sort of 3 to 4 months because she woke up quite slowly. And when she woke up, it was clear that life had completely changed. And I suppose my reaction to that was to stand up to the tragedy and to stand up to the trauma and not allow it to steamroller me. And so, yes, I think it made me grasp onto life and the experiences of life more strongly, I think, and with more kind of passion than I might have done had it not happened. Although that's, of course, an impossible question to answer. Who knows what would have happened if it hadn't happened?
Yes, the only thing I wondered, if it hadn't happened, is if you would have been... sort of your adventures might have been more curtailed. The pull of home might have been stronger.
Yeah, so I ended up, I went to live in Ireland with sort of living on the road with gypsies. Then I went to university, and after that I went to America and worked on a ranch as a cowgirl and had kids, and then later on went to Russia and spent quite a lot of time in a fairly extreme part of Russia. And I'm sure that, and I can say this, my siblings as well have gone on to do unusual, that, you know, what they have done is quite unusual as well. And I think that if Mum had been there, it's a good observation that I think if Mum had been there, we probably might have possibly stayed closer to home, or come back more easily from it. Certainly the emotional journey that we would have been on would have been completely different. And that's the life, and it's one of the things I write about in the book. It's very difficult to imagine my life if the accident hadn't happened, because it's so much a part of who I am and what I do. But it also, I ended up having two children in my 20s. I may not have done that if I hadn't lost my own family and the kind of comfort of family life very abruptly. And so, of course, I lament the fact the accident happened. I miss Mum, but I know that it's part of me, and I can't change that. And maybe there are things that would, you know, that there are things in my life that I really, really value, which the accident has given me as well.
And one of the things that that you have become is really like an old-fashioned adventuress.
Well, I think, I did. Through my 20s and my 30s, I definitely did. I was very lucky that I started doing journalism in my early 20s, and from that I did a lot of travel journalism, and I did get to do some absolutely extraordinary travel through that as well, because I was writing about a lot of different countries. But I'd always had a kind of thing about Ireland and also about Texas, those were the first countries that I naturally was drawn to. But going off to Russia, I was in the Caucasus Mountains in Russia a lot in my 30s, partly because, well, actually mainly, let's be honest about this, mainly because there was a man there that I was going and seeing. And it was a very, very exciting time, and I'm kind of grateful, really grateful for that experience, for sure.
I wanted to talk about the sense of wildness, because to me it seemed that you grew up in this very idyllic sense, and as you said, very supported, very enveloped with love, and you were free. And it wasn't so much that you went wild, it was like a horse, you were untethered.
Yes, definitely. Mum, she was a really, really interesting woman, because she was very, very unconventional, but she didn't look particularly unconventional. She looked like a normal woman bringing her children up, but she gave us... when I was seven, we moved from Oxford to Wiltshire, where I grew up, and at that point my childhood basically comes into sharper focus and I can really remember it. And we were pretty much, as little children, we spent a lot of time on our ponies. We were outside a lot of the time. We had the kind of childhood that people lament children don't really have anymore, although I think that they do, because my children are having a version of that. But she also, as we became teenagers, Mum didn't really give us anything to rebel against, let's say. She was very, very liberal. We were allowed to pretty much do as we chose, as long as we were working hard at school and we were polite and we weren't completely out of control at all. But there were not very many boundaries, let's say, in the way that we lived, and we were allowed to have boyfriends, and we used to ride our horses in the middle of the night to various villages nearby, because that was the only transport we had as well. If you live in the country, we had to ride around as a way of kind of moving around. So it was in the middle of this, I suppose it was the end of my childhood really, because I was 16, that Mum had the accident. And it wasn't as though the accident happened and then I suddenly went out. I think she was already sending us out, you know, in my early teens before the accident happened.
Yeah. I was going to say, because it didn't strike me as, you know, people might look at your life now as if you've settled down and you live in a more conventional way with a husband and children at home which occupy you, etc. But I didn't see how you could have lived other personally. But one thing I wanted to ask you about was the role of horses, because horses and spirituality seem to be twinned. Living with nature, there seems to be a connection there. Tell me a bit about that in your life.
Well, so it was when I was seven that we moved to the countryside, and Mum made a very conscious effort. So I'm the youngest of five, and her elder three children she brought up in Oxford, and then we moved to the country, and she very much wanted my sister, who's closest in age, and myself to have ponies. And I think, as well as the experience of the fun of being with your kids and being around ponies, there is also the stuff that ponies give you basically as children, and I see that with my own children now, which is the pony kind of encourages a child to be independent and encourages a child to be quite brave, and also it's an animal, so it's somebody else to look after, which, you know, which isn't themselves, which is always a good thing for a child as well. And then I really loved, I mean, I really, really loved riding. I'm not incredibly sentimental about horses, but I just love being around them, and I love the, I mean, I love the danger of them, and I love the excitement of them, and that is a big part of what I kind of write about in the book, is wanting to touch some of that danger. And I think that was a reaction to the accident. I'm sure that was, that it was, that it was a way of, it was a way of kind of not allowing the accident to have won over me, and it was a way of saying I'm bigger than the accident. And you know, when I refer to the accident, because Mum was, because she'd had this horrific accident, but she was still alive, so it kept the accident as a living thing in our lives, though it didn't end. She didn't die. She lived in that state for 22 years. So I was kind of coming up against the circumstances of what happened when I was 16, all the way through my late teens, all the way through my 20s, all the way through my 30s. And sometimes I went right to horses, like when I was living in Texas, and other times I kind of moved right back from them. There was a period when I had my eldest two children. My first marriage had failed, and I was living with my eldest two kids in Oxford, and I was working very hard. But I'm always kind of pulled back to them, and I've got five children now, and we recently moved out to Oxfordshire because my kind of craving for them to have that sense of horses, of the wildness of horses, of the animals. I mean, they're extraordinary. It's not like having a dog. It's not a domestic, although it can be. But it's very different from a domestic relationship with an animal. And that power and the respect that you have to have for each other is something that, yeah, I hope that I can give my children, and I definitely still crave it in life now.
Yeah, I thought that was a wonderful metaphor. When you were in Texas and you broke a wild horse, and in a sense, keeping horses is like keeping children. There's a sense of keeping it within bounds, but keeping a wild part of them alive.
Yeah,
is essential.
Yeah. I mean, and that's, I suppose, one of the challenges of life, is that how do you go on living in that wild way? Because when you're in your 20s, in earlier in life, it's easy to kind of, wild behavior is more accessible in your 20s. You can do, you know, wild travel and wild relationships. And
it's certainly more socially acceptable.
Yeah.
More conventional.
One of the things I'm really interested in is, I'm 41 now, is how I can go on finding that part of myself, which isn't just the everyday part, which is looking after my children and doing my work and having supper with my husband and seeing my friends, but how I can keep some part of that, it's not animalistic, that's the wrong word, but it's something, it is a spiritual, it is a kind of some part of you, which is an essential being, I suppose, which in a way nobody else can touch. Your relationships with other people don't really touch it. And for me, I find that with horses. And I still go, and when I can find time, I go and I ride racehorses occasionally. And for me, that being able to get onto a racehorse and gallop across a field is sometimes really terrifying and just so exciting. Makes me feel alive and makes me feel, you know, as though I haven't just kind of vanished behind the busyness of the rest of life. Mm-hmm. As well, it puts you in the moment, I think. Yes. That's another thing,
and pushes the contours of,
yeah,
your life, and to keep pushing, to keep growing,
yeah,
to keep moving and testing,
yeah,
the capacity of your life.
Mm. Mm.
Do you think you were more, I wouldn't say more affected, but I think you're very conscious of the fact that your mother's accident had a different type of wound to you because of your age. Because you were the youngest.
Yeah, I was 16, which I think is I've got a son who's 16 now, and I look at where he is, and he is about to, I mean, he is flourishing. He's about to kind of fly away from me, I suppose. And it's incredible. It's beautiful to see him at that stage. And sometimes I actually feel quite upset when I look at him and I think about what was happening in my life at that same stage, because you're not a child. You're testing new relationships. You're testing new boundaries. Everything is quite poignant, I suppose, because also you're on the cusp. And I think it was a really terrible moment for something so catastrophic to happen. I mean, I'm also really lucky because I had 16 years of a really, really wonderful mother and a really, really stable, loving childhood. And I know that's, you know, that's a huge privilege. Not everybody has that for any time, let alone 16 years. But it was pretty awful timing for sure. And I think it probably, the emotional resonance of the accident wrote itself very strongly into my DNA, because I was, or into my spirit, into my blood. It just became a part of me completely, because it was almost as though the accident was born at the moment that I, as an adult, was being born as well.
Throughout the book, you get a sense that it was this lightning bolt that came down, and it was explosive and propulsive and forging for you. And you could have been thrown into depression, but instead you were propelled into exhilaration almost.
Yeah. I mean, there have been some very, very bleak moments as well, and there have been some very exciting times. I mean, I could have reacted by retreat, but I think that my mother would have never retreated from anything. And the way that I've watched my other sisters as well, their reaction to it, we've all stood up to it, I think. And I hope she would be proud with the things that we've done too. But it was a very violent thing to happen. And the ongoing nature of it, because Mum was very, very ill for such a long time, and we were dealing with all of her different medical conditions. I mean, quite apart from the fact of being in a coma for 3 or 4 months, and then her gradual awakening, which is so different from the way you see it ever depicted in movies, it has none of the kind of romance and excitement of that, of a sudden awakening at all. And it was, you know, living with what happened to Mum was like living with a certain emotional violence around you all the time, because I was always aware that she... So for the first couple of years after the accident, we tried to have her living at home, and then it became clear that she needed very full-on nursing care and mental and physical, help, basically. And so whatever I was doing, even when I was happy, when I was doing something wonderful, when I just arrived at university or when I just had my first baby, I was always aware that she was still sitting in a nursing home in a terribly, terribly damaged state, maybe with some vaguest sense that something had been lost. Or, I mean, one of Mum's tragedies is that she had very extreme brain damage, but she had some kind of awareness as well. She could kind of, when you walked into a room, she might make a strange noise or wave her arms in the air. She did have some awareness, definitely, and the nurses who looked after her really, really loved her, and saw all the, you know, the really wonderful person that she was, even through her terrible brain damage. So for 22 years, I was living with this, its guilt, its sadness, its trauma, its just anger, like straightforward anger about everything that's been lost. So it was a big emotional cocktail to have there all the time. And I mean, even when she died, that doesn't just end, you know, just because she's died. The sadness doesn't just go away at all. And in fact, the grief that I felt after she'd died, even though she had been sort of, I'd been in a way in a state of preparation for 22 years, the grief that I felt was absolutely enormous. And that was quite shocking in itself. And I think Mum died 3 years ago, and I think and the process of writing the book has been really useful to understand what went on. It was such a strange emotional journey.
And also, you know, because my mother died, and one of the things that remains difficult is your life unwitnessed by that person. And triply hard for you, because while it was unwitnessed, you were still doing the showing up. And then also when somebody dies, you know, like, everyone else is over your tragedy, you know, in a couple of weeks, and you're expected to go on. And this went on for 22 years that you and your family are holding this traumatic space.
Yeah. I think that thing of it being unwitnessed as well, is really, really true. The person that you are, you know, when you're a daughter, probably when you're a son as well, but that relationship you have with you, that you have with your mother, is unlike any other relationship at all. And, you know, it's a cliche, but it's true that nobody else can be like your mother. And I think for a time in my 20s, I was kind of looking for another mother as well. I used to kind of latch on to friends' mothers and think, she can be my mother for a bit. And I've always, you know, felt drawn, I suppose, to women who are around the age of mum, because I was looking for that person. But, you know, I pray that my children never have to... I pray that I'm around for my children for a long time, because I think going through also the big rites of passage of leaving home, having kids of your own, obviously, is a really obvious one, being in a long-term relationship. I also got divorced and then got remarried. Doing that without your mum to talk to, without your mum to... you know, I always imagine, what would mum be sending me a text message now? Mum had her accident before, you know, long before mobile phones happened. So I don't know what her relationship with technology would have been like exactly. But that, yeah, the feeling of going through life as a woman without your mother is really tough. There's no way around that. It's really difficult.
Not recommended.
No, no way.
As a journalist, you're accustomed and adept at using different voices, and the book was beautifully written. And it's written in a very uncompromising voice. Is that what you would consider your authentic voice?
Yes, definitely. I mean, I find when I meet somebody new, I always want to get straight down to the nitty-gritty of real life and real stuff. I don't really like small talk. I want to know... I mean, I don't think it's any surprise I'm a journalist. I want to know about the intimate details of somebody's life as quickly as possible, basically, because then you can kind of work out your connections. And I sometimes find myself in social situations asking, like, really personal, maybe really inappropriate questions, because I just can't help it. I want to know... all of the stuff, because I suppose that's the truth in life, and that's what I wanted to put into the book. I don't like reading books where you feel like the author is holding something back, or, you know, a memoir where they haven't told you exactly what they feel about their love life, or the relationship that hasn't worked, or how they make their, you know, work-life balance, or mothering, how they make those things work. Those are all the really important questions for me, and so it just seemed natural to write in really, you know, I've written in a lot of detail, or it's very confessional, you know, I haven't held anything back at all from the reader. And I hope that if someone's going to take the time to read my book and buy my book, then I hope they will be repaid by thinking, well, you've definitely got the whole story there. Yeah. You know, there is nothing that I haven't written about. And I guess I feel like I owe that to the reader, and it is, yeah, it's absolutely my voice, definitely.
Excellent. Well, Clover Straub, thank you very much
for sharing
your voice and sharing your story today on Radio Gorgeous.
Thank you very much.
Wild thing, I think I love you. Sure. Come on and hold me tight. I love.
This is a Radio Gorgeous production for Radio Gorgeous 2017. For more information, go to radiogorgeous.com.